Well, last Wednesday, brothers and sisters, we began to study Ecclesiastes together. And we saw the main theme of the book is the brevity of life. Life is but a breath. It is short and fragile, and it is quickly over because of the curse of sin. And so in light of this, Ecclesiastes is asking, how do we live wisely with the time that we have? And with a particular focus on our work, our labour. Since life is so short and uncertain, how do we gain benefit from all our hard work and labour? How do we make what we do in our brief time successful and meaningful? And again, we saw how it's because of the curse that our work in this world is marked by toil and frustration. So how and why should we work in a wise way? Well, this evening we're going to continue looking at the introductory section of the book, which is just laying out these questions for us. And we're going to look in chapter 1 at verses 4 to 11 in particular. Verses which are a meditation or even perhaps a poem composed that, again, is introducing the book and these great themes and asking us to think deeply about them. So let me read to us from chapter 1, verse 1 to 11. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labour in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south, and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually, and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labour. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Amen. So this is a very beautiful meditation that again is setting out to us the main themes of the book. And like with all good poetry, it's aiming not just to make us think about these things, but to feel them, to really feel these things deeply. And really the preacher, Solomon, he's trying to make us feel the difficulty that we're in. What should we do with this brief breath in this world full of toil? And as things seem to go on and on, over and over again, without end. If you live with me, how he pictures this to us. He says, the sun rises and sets each day. The rivers flow into the seas, but they're never filled. The winds blow round and round. And he's saying the same things occur day after day, over and over again. All things are full of labour, he says. The sun, the water, the wind, they all seem to be working hard. There's a lot of effort, but only to do the same thing over and over again. So is this going anywhere? Is it leading to anything? Is this ever going to end? Now, do you ever feel that your life is like that? The preacher is asking. Do you ever feel that a bit like you're stuck on Groundhog Day, stuck in a bit of a loop? Do you find you're doing the same things over and over? And you wonder, am I making any progress? Am I achieving anything? Is there an end to all my toil and labor? Or is it just the daily grind? Whether that's going into the office day after day, or it's doing all the cooking and cleaning. If you think about it, our work most days is we are actually doing the same things again and again. And don't you find the same problems come up again and again? And we get frustrated because you think you've resolved something, but it happens again. Do you get a sense of what he's trying to say to us in this picture? We had a little snapshot of this in our home just 2 days ago with the six of us. You can imagine there's always a lot of laundry. So once a week, we all get together, we sort it out, we put it in piles, put it in people's rooms. Well, it was laundry day again. And Theo said to me, with real frustration, "Why are we doing this again? I just did this last week. Why do I have to waste my time putting it all away again?" Do you ever feel like that about work? But the world keeps turning and the work still needs doing. This is what the preacher's wanting us to feel. The anxiety, the dilemma, the struggle we have. Well, the preacher also says, one generation follows after another, but there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come. So he's saying, you know, life is a breath and it's over, and then it's quickly forgotten by those who come after us. I hope this isn't depressing, but 100 years from now, no one's going to remember us sat here in this room or what we've done. And so you might say, well, so are all my works and efforts for nothing then? That's what Solomon wants you to be thinking about. Have you ever stood in an old churchyard, a graveyard, and had that kind of melancholy feeling, that sadness, as you think about the graves that you're walking over? That there are people buried beneath your feet who they were loved, that they were cherished, that they lived, they worked, they fought, they built, they suffered. But now generations later, who knows anything about them, all that they went through? Or if you think about it this way, when you're on the beach and you put your foot down into the sand and you can leave an impression of your foot for others to see. Or maybe if you're with the kids, you build a big sandcastle. But then if you come back the same time, 24 hours later, your footprint will have disappeared. Your sandcastle will have been washed away by the tides coming in and out. And the preacher's saying, life seems to be like that. And he's musing on this and he's saying, so what's all our hard efforts and toil for if it's not even going to be remembered? And then the preacher also says, again, it's all expressed so beautifully, isn't it, in the way he puts it. But he's saying that our short lives are subject to forces and systems beyond our grasp, beyond our control. In verse 6, when the preacher speaks of the wind blowing around, that's the start of a theme that runs through the letter. You know, there are recurring phrases in Ecclesiastes, like breath of breaths, vanity of vanities, or under the sun. Well, one of those recurring phrases is grasping for the wind. You'll find that comes up throughout the book, that life is like grasping for the wind. And I'm no expert, but the Hebrew is quite difficult to translate into English. And grasping after wind is helpful. But what it maybe doesn't quite convey is it's really saying something like, we're blown about by the wind. And it's not something that you can measure or understand or control. Wind throughout the book often represents forces and powers beyond human grasp, when he goes on to say, you know, the eyes never satisfy, the ears with all its hearing, that's a fancy way of saying we don't understand. And no matter how much you study it, you'll never be able to understand all of it. And I suppose that's true still today. If people are trying to measure the wind or the global ecosystem of the earth, well, we're never going to be able to do it. It's too complicated and too amazing. And he's saying there are things like that. Think of the wind that deeply affect your life and that you can be knocked this way and that way, but you've got no control. You've got no understanding. If it helps, think of the words of the Lord in John 3. He says, the wind blows where it wishes and you hear the sound of it, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it goes. That's what Ecclesiastes is saying here. So, again, the preacher's meditating on these things. He wants this to be running through our hearts. And he wants us to join him in a search for real meaning and purpose and real contentment. If all of this is true, this is the reality of what it's like. Well, how do you live wisely when your life is but a breath and the world is just going to keep turning? What are you toiling for? And he's really asking, and this is really crucial. He's saying, is this going anywhere? Is life going somewhere? Is there an end, a purpose, a goal? Will my labors result in getting to something? Or is it just going to, I'm just going to end and it just goes, happens all over again. And things just carry on without me. So how does that help us this evening? These are the struggles we all have. Well, the first thing to take from this at the very start of the book is just simply that Solomon the preacher is trying to get us to think. He just wants you to think deeply about the meaning and purpose of your life. If I could put it this way, he's trying to get you to ask the right questions, to spend your time on what really matters. As we said last week, he wants you to face up to the harsh realities of life in a fallen world. Not hide from it, not try and sugarcoat it, but see the reality of what it's like under the fall and face it head on. And he wants you to be troubled by this. He wants you to be unhappy about this. We suffer today, don't we, under the tyranny of busyness. We rush through life. There's always another task to do. And we have such little time to stop and think about the bigger picture. We don't live contemplative lives where we're thinking about these things. There's too much to do. And we're so desensitized by distractions and by temporary pleasures. We try to avoid thinking these disturbing thoughts about mortality and the shortness of life. And the preacher is saying to us so beautifully and poetically, you need to think about these things. Soul, where are you going? What are you doing with your time? What does it mean? What are you trying to achieve here? And as part of that, understand his goal is to humble us. He's trying to humble us. He wants to help us realize that life is not all about us. That it's true, the world can carry on quite well without us. Which is, that's a very humbling thought, isn't it? All our, and I hope I'm not just speaking about myself, but all our delusions of grandeur come crashing down when you realize you're a breath, you're a footprint in the sand, and soon you won't even be a memory. And in our sinfulness, we're so wrapped up in ourselves, we need this reality check. But he's doing this demolition work so that we can begin to have the right perspective. One that centers on God, the Holy One, the Eternal One, and the one from whom all life comes and to whom life returns, and the one that all life is for. In essence, what Solomon is trying to get you to feel, as you feel this dissatisfaction, as you realize there's so much you don't understand, and you're not content, and you've not got the answer, Solomon wants you to ask why you feel that is a bad thing. Why are you troubled by the shortness of life and the futility of so much of life? Because again, he wants you to realize you feel that way because you are made for something greater. We feel troubled by the shortness of life that seems to call all its value into question. And Solomon's saying, but do you know why you feel that? And he's going to tell us why later. It's because God has put eternity in our hearts. We're made in God's image. And we're all going to struggle with the transitory nature of life because we have immortal souls. We were made for so much more. And again, he's just trying to awaken us to this. Now again, this is only his introduction. But there are here some subtle hints of what he wants to teach us. Glimpses of the truth. You see, throughout, Solomon's trying to subtly change how you think about your brief breath of a life. He's not denying all these struggles are real that you'll go through. But he wants to change how you think about them. And look at them in a whole new light, in a God-centered way. So think about the little hints here. Think again about the flow of the rivers, the movements of the sun, the blowing of the wind, and how ordered it is. Because all these things are in God's hands. They're not under our control and understanding, but they're in God's hands. Again, it's very difficult, but you've got to try and put yourself back in the shoes of somebody in Solomon's time in the ancient world. And pretty much everybody outside of Israel, and a lot of people in Israel, they were fundamentally pagan in how they thought about these things. They thought life was chaotic and random. Fate and chance happen to every man. That the dark forces of chaos are always lurking at the edges, just waiting to burst in on you and sweep everything away. They thought the elements, the sun, the stars, the waters, the wind, they're controlled by the gods. Or they are the gods, and they're fickle and cruel. And so your life is affected by forces far above you, and the movement of the stars, the whims of the gods, the roll of the dice, and it's all so uncertain and changeable. That's the world Solomon's speaking into. And you see how even right here, he's telling us a very different story. Actually, the truth is very different. He's saying even in questioning us, there's a very different understanding of the world. Again, he's only hinting at these things. But he's already starting to undermine our wrong views of the world. What is he really telling us here? Well, that God, a loving creator, is in charge. Think about the scriptures you know, brothers and sisters. Who has established the earth on its foundations and it shall not be moved? Who makes the sun rise and set each day and run its course like a happy bridegroom because he's ordained it so? Who sets the boundaries of the waters that they cannot go past? Psalm 104. Who causes the grass to grow and the water to flow and then return? Psalm 104. All these wonderful things God does. And amidst the seeming toil, the brief breath of life, there is an order. Everything's in the hands of God, so life continues. Everything is not random. He's in control, and that's what gives us hope and stability and where we can find purpose. And it's in knowing God, only in knowing God as creator, as eternal, that you can make sense of life. If everything in this life is so shifting and always on the move and so over so quick, what you need is the God who's outside and beyond and above all of that, the transcendent and eternal. Already Solomon's beginning to point us to that. And that's how we make sense of this. And then ultimately, again, there is an answer to the question. It doesn't come up in this opening verses, but as to the question of does your work have meaning? Is life going somewhere? Is there an end? Is there a purpose? Or is it just going to be the sun coming up over and over again? Well, we'll see in future weeks, the Lord willing, the answer of the book is yes. Yes. There's a glorious end and meaning to all things. And it's here in Ecclesiastes. And that glorious end is to know God, to serve him. This brings real happiness. This God gives us good gifts to enjoy, including the sun, the water, and the wind. And in the end, everything shall be brought before him to face his judgment. Every work will be subject to his judgment. That's the end goal all of creation's moving towards. Those are the very final words of the book in chapter 12. For God will bring every work into judgment. It's the answer, you see, to what he's saying. Is this going somewhere? Is my life going somewhere? Yes, Sir Solomon. You'll go to meet this God. That's what you need to be living for. That's what counts. How will your works look before him? God will bring every work into judgment. Now, to say any more, I risk really going beyond this passage. And we should end here. But again, I hope you're beginning to see the spirit and the meaning of this book and how helpful it is as it speaks into our daily struggles. If it's doing the laundry, even doing the laundry week after week, actually that work matters. If you know this glorious God and you're doing that and every other work for him, to be ready for him, it's a wonderful thing that gives help meaning to all our work, all our struggle. And if I could put it this way, is there anything new under the sun? Well, behold, says the Lord, I make all things new. As we're thinking about this fallen creation, again, Ecclesiastes will point us forward to the coming new creation. Is there anything new under this sun? No. But God says he will make all things new. And that's what we're looking for. That is where we must look. So I hope that this really does whet your appetite, brothers and sisters, and we will, the Lord willing, come back and see how else the preacher tears down our idols and points us in the right way in future weeks.